Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours, Blog Talk Radio. I am G.L. Ross, your host. Today's guest is author Kat Flannery, the number one selling author with Imagine Publishing. She's here today to talk to us about Sacred Legacy, Book 3 in the Branded Trilogy. Welcome, Kat.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well. Please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself as far as where you live, your family, what your hobbies are.
I live in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So right now the seasons are changing and we've lost our summer and we're heading into a little bit of a cold fall, although I love it because the leaves are changing colors and it's my favorite season, so I'm okay with that. I was born in the United States and moved to Canada and lived here ever since I was a little girl, and I love my country. I've got three teenage sons, so that's why I enjoy a glass of whiskey once in a while.
I understand. I have one, I enjoy wine, so I can't imagine three.
You understand where I'm coming from there. I've been writing since I was little, and I always had a story in my head, or I'd make up stories and things like that, and so when my first son was born, I thought, you know, maybe I would try my hand at writing, and I did freelance writing for a little bit and worked for a magazine for some time and then decided that wasn't for me. I didn't necessarily like to be told what to write, so I thought I would start writing books, and that's kind of where my journey started with being an author, and been married for 16 years with my husband for almost 20 years, and love to camp, I love to read, I like quiet nights by the fire when it's snowing outside, and I'm just a hometown girl.
Sounds like my kind of life. when you were saying that you love to write, is that your full-time job besides being a mom and a wife? Is that your full-time job, or is writing more of a part-time job, and is there some other type of career?
You know what? Writing was a full-time job for me up until actually recently, and then I decided to go work out of the home for a little bit just because I needed to get some interaction with people. I was pretty well stuck in the home all the time, and, you know, with the boys getting older and stuff, I was taking freelance jobs on the side, and so I was basically never away from my computer, and I love writing so much, so I decided to go out and, you know, be out of the home, and I absolutely love it, and it has just fueled my writing by 100 times. So I come home from work, I, you know, make supper for the kids and sit down and I write. And I write every night. So when I'm working on a book, I write every night. And I give myself a word quota. So I do about 2,500 words a week.
Gotcha. Well, I know you have to make yourself a schedule and stay on task because I'm the same way. And it seems like writing it late at night when everybody else has gone to bed is the only time you can finally get everything quiet to really focus. So I understand where you're coming from there. The thing I usually ask my guests at this point is about their story and what makes their story unique. And I have to say that when I was researching Sacred Legacy and the Branded Trilogy, I was blown away by the explanation of the genre: historical Western paranormal romance. Okay, this has to be the first. So tell us how you came up with this genre and how you came up with the idea for the Branded Trilogy.
So I'm half Italian, and well, I don't really follow rules very well, so I started writing Western historical romance, my first book, Chasing Clovers and stuff, and then, you know, I got to talking to my publisher, who is awesome and amazing, and Cheryl K. Tardif, she's just unbelievable, and she said, you know, Kat, she said, I really think that you need to push some boundaries here, and, you know, you can, you know, why have you ever thought of paranormal? And I absolutely thought she was crazy. Like, I was like, you got to be kidding me, you know. There's no way. Of course I love Anne Rice, and I love, you know, all that that vampire stuff, and I loved all that, but I wasn't going to write about that. Like, that just wasn't who I was. And so then it got to thinking, and I was starting this book, Lakota Honor, and I was writing it, and I was about 30,000 words into it, and I just stopped. I had no words. I had nothing. I it was writer's block to the max, and it was, something was telling me it wasn't the right story, and, my main character, something, was wrong with him, and I really was drawn to the antagonist instead, to my villain. Like, there was something about him that I absolutely wanted to find out, and so what I ended up doing was taking her advice, and in Lakota Honor, I decided to add just a small bit of paranormal, and I changed my antagonist, Otakate, to my protagonist, and I wrote the story based around him and the young girl, Nora. And she could heal with her hands, and she didn't know why she could heal with her hands, and it got her into a lot of trouble. And that was actually supposed to be a standalone book. I had no intentions of writing a trilogy from it. However, when the book came out, it did very well, and my readers would, email me and ask me, how did Nora get this gift, and how did this happen, and such. And, I got to thinking, well, I don't really know how she got this gift. I'm not quite sure. So I started to think about it, and then a story started coming, and I thought, okay, So I decided that I owed my readers an explanation, and that's when I wrote Blood Curse, and that became the second book of the Branded Trilogy. And I took that story, and I moved it back 200 years, and I explained how these women had these gifts and what they were, and in that story, that's where I actually first introduced you to Sura, who is a little girl, and she is a Shuvani, which is the highest in the Gypsy clan, and she has these certain powers, very strong powers. She can heal with her hands, she can raise the dead, those types of things. She takes everything upon herself and then expels it out afterward by vomiting or whatever, and she gets very sick. However, there's a pendant that the Shuvani carries, and it's been passed on through family to family, and that pendant is very powerful. However, with that pendant, you do not need to be a Shuvani to hold the power if you have it. So within the story of Blood Curse, people are hunting the little girl because they want to kill her because of a curse her mother put on a certain family. And so that's where I introduce you to her. At the end of that book, I leave you hanging a little bit to know what kind of happens to her. So then that comes with Sacred Legacy, where I bring her back as an adult, as a young woman. And in Sacred Legacy is where I actually tell you why she is the way she is. She's very tortured and a very angry woman. She's had to endure a very hard life, and she's had to endure a very tragic loss that she could not do anything about, even though she had healing abilities. She could not save the one person she wanted to save. And so she carries a lot of angst and a lot of regret, guilt, and hatred inside of her heart. And in Sacred Legacy, she runs into her past love, which is Red Wolf, who I also introduce in Blood Curse. And they do not like each other. So that ensues a lot of conflict. And within the story, this story is such an emotional story. It is full of, the best way that I can describe this story in three words is it is about loss, love, and redemption. It's about her finding herself again and her realizing that she needs to forgive herself and being able to love again. And it's taken from two people's point of view, hers and Red Wolf's point of view. And that's what it's about. And I initially wrote this last book for my brother, and I wanted to give him a happy ending because he passed away a few years ago. So I put a lot of my own grief inside of the novel itself. So it's a very emotional novel, and I felt that it was fitting and the best way to end the trilogy.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting, knowing the story behind the story. And understanding where you come up with that type of emotion and passion that your characters enhance and within the story. Now, Sacred Legacy, from what I'm gathering, then cannot be read as a standalone. You would not understand the full storyline unless you read the entire trilogy. Is that true?
No, not necessarily. You could read them all as standalones if you chose to. You would just, Lakota Honor, definitely you can read as a standalone. Blood Curse, you can read as a standalone, but I will leave you guessing. Like, I tie up all the loose ends except for one, and I do that on purpose. And so you'll want to read Sacred Legacy to find out what happened. You can also read, I have had many readers that have read just Sacred Legacy and quite enjoyed it. So it's, I don't go back into the book, the second book, Blood Curse, very often at all in Sacred Legacy. I go through explaining her certain powers and gifts that she has, but there is not a lot of magic per se in Sacred Legacy due to the fact that she refuses to use her gift. So it's basically a Western historical romance with suspense.
So have you always been a Western history junkie? I mean, even growing up in school, were you one of those who loved history class?
Absolutely. I've always said, if I couldn't be a writer, I'd be a history teacher. Like, I love everything about history. And I learn so much when I research that, you know, I often think, you know, I could write so many different books, but, you know, I'm bound to the one that I'm writing at that moment. But
yes.
It is absolutely fascinating to me, the lives that the people led back then and the things that went on back then and how they persevered and how strong they were. And that's why I choose to write historical, because to me it wasn't romantic. It wasn't those, you know, frou-frou fluffy things. It wasn't. But I, as a writer, have the ability to romanticize it, to give the reader an insight on possibly what maybe it was like back then, you know, what maybe it looked like back then. And, you know, I always like to add factual details in all of my books, things that were happening at the time. I take a lot of time to research what the land looked like, what, you know, even what trees grew back then, and, you know, those types of things. They're very important to me, and I believe they're very important to a reader, you know, just like the dress,
sure,
and the
buffet
and how they spoke. Yeah.
No, it absolutely helps you envision it in your mind as you're reading it. If it's not lining up with something you know that's to be, can kind of throw you off. So I respect you for doing that type of research. I'm interested, though, when Thura, she swears off her magic, and so now she's vulnerable to the Rinaldi clan. And I know they apparently want to kill her and take the pendant that seems to be the key to her power. How did you come up with the idea of the pendant?
I came up with the idea of the pendant, actually, in Blood Curse. Blood Curse, so Sura's mother was Vautama, just to give you a little bit of backstory. And Vautama laid a curse upon the Monroe family. And the Monroe family was a very wealthy family. They had tobacco plantation in Virginia. And they were extremely wealthy. And she was in love with one of them. And so because of certain circumstances, she could not have him. She decided that she was going to place this curse on them, and they were very mean to her, and she grew a black heart, basically. She was very evil, and so they were hanging her, and they were going to burn her, and before she died, she placed a curse on them, on all their firstborn daughters, that they would die, and the curse fell through, or the curse came true, and so they were searching for her daughter because she had a baby, and they knew that if they killed her, that would break that curse, which is true. Now, Pril, who is Vadima's sister, is the one who raised Sura, and she was looking for the pendant, because with the pendant, Pril would have been able to break the curse on her own, but the pendant was lost. They could not find the pendant, so they were basically running for their lives is what they were doing. They were moving as the clan, you know, they have peddlers. They would move from, you know, town to town to just try and outrun the Monroes, and it didn't really work for them. The Rinaldi clan is where Sura and Vautama and Pril actually originated from. That was their original clan. They were Rinaldis, and they wanted them dead as well because they didn't want to be hunted either. And so they were looking for the little girl as well. So that's why they want Sura, and that's why they still want the pendant. They want revenge for things that have happened in Blood Curse.
Well, I think the reason I think it's so interesting about the pendant is because here you're talking about history. And when I was doing genealogy searches of my family and looking at old photographs, I would always notice that on my great-great-great-grandmothers and all in the pictures, the beautiful pendants that they always had, and they were always so
yes.
ornate and gorgeous, and you see them in all the pictures. And so immediately when I saw that, I thought, she has to have pictures like that of her own somewhere, that she's seen
absolutely.
That too.
Absolutely.
Well, I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's funny that you said that, because when I was thinking of something, and I was thinking I need something as I was writing Blood Curse, I need this, you know, I need something else. And I thought, you know, a talisman, oh, a pendant. And my great-great-grandmother and grandfather's picture was sitting on my mantle, and my great-great-grandmother had this massive pendant on.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, you know, this necklace, right? Like, I'm
yes,
going to do this
exactly.
necklace.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Well, now tell us about Red Wolf, because that name just makes him sound sexy.
Oh, he is. Oh, he is. And he's tough and he's rough. And he's you know, he's full of, he's an egotistical, you know, type of guy, and he's got his pride. Red Wolf is introduced actually in Blood Curse, and he is found by one of my other characters. He was a slave. He was trapped, and he was stolen when he was 12 years old. And so they actually end up bringing him with them. And so he grows up with Sura in England. He grows up with her, and he falls in love with her. And he learns the life of a merchant from Cade's stepfather. And so he is a merchant. And so when things didn't work out with them, he went back and sailed to sea, and it just so happened that they ran into each other on, you know, the wharf at Jamestown. And that's where that story, their story, starts. And then throughout the story, you find out what actually happened between them. But I absolutely love Red Wolf. I love everything about him. I love his humor and his, you know, his smart remarks and his, you know, I love his pride, and I love his love of his heritage and the Cherokee people.
Well, he sounds fascinating. And I just, like I said, I love the name. And since we're talking about names of characters, I have to know, how did you come up with the name Romulus Black for the evil character in your storyline? Because I would have never come up with something that creative. Where did you get that name?
So, actually, my dad, you know, I love my parents and my sister and my sister-in-law, you know, I bounce ideas off them all the time. And, you know, because this was, you know, I was taking the book back to the 1700s, and because there was gypsies and the, you know, they were Spanish and things like that, I wanted a name that really called out to you, like really, you know, and I do that with all characters in every single one of my books. It takes me weeks to figure out their names. And, you know, if a name doesn't fit, it doesn't work for me, you know.
Right.
And through Blood Curse, I chose a very unique names, like Gallius, Vadima, Pril, Milash, those types of names. And so when it came to choosing this evil corsair, this, you know, this kind of like pirate guy, I was thinking, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, the only pirate I know is Captain Jack Sparrow, and well, he wasn't that, you know, scary looking, right? You know,
yes, exactly.
He was good to look at, but
yes.
He wasn't that scary looking. And so I was talking to my dad one night, and, you know, my dad loves pirates, and he loves those types of things, and, you know, he was saying, you know, well, back, you know, I think it was the 1500s, there was Romulus and then some other guy, and, you know, they tore down the Empire of Rome, and they were really bad. And I was thinking, oh, you know, Romulus, like, I just love that name. And, you know, and then I thought, Romulus Black, that's perfect, because, you know, he's like Captain Black, like, he was evil, and it just fit. And he was very evil, so it just fit, and I just went with it. And yeah, I love that name.
Oh, I do too. I love it. I mean, it's so catchy. Well, now, how long did it take you to write Sacred Legacy?
Okay, so Sacred Legacy took me 2.5 months to write. The story was there, and I just wrote it. And that is generally how I write almost all of my full-length novels. I how the process usually works for me is I get an idea, and then that idea stirs and it stirs and it stirs, and it, you know, this comes and that comes, and as it's coming, I write things down and I figure things out, and once I have my plot, I go from there, and then all of a sudden, and it never fails, at like 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and I have this full story in my head, and I have to write it down. Mm-hmm. And once I have, you know, the basics of what I really need that is going to fill me with this story, that's going to ground me, that's going to make me be able to write something that's going to touch people, I just sit down and I write. And I will write 5,000 words a day, 2,000 words a day. I know with Sacred Legacy, it just came out, and I was writing almost 15,000 words a week, like, you know, sometimes. And then sometimes it would be, you know, 5,000 words a week. And, yeah, I finished it very quick. Lakota Honor was the same way after I lost that 30,000 words and I realized where the story was actually supposed to be. I wrote that story, too, in almost 3 months. And the only one that took a little bit of time was Blood Curse, because I had to do an obscene amount of, like, so much research for that. I had never written a book in the 1700s. I didn't know very much about the colonies and what existed then and how they lived then, and other than, you know, the witch hunts, but that was in, you know, the 15 or late 1600s. So I didn't really know a lot about that. And so I needed to really research what was involved, and I needed to research the, you know, the gypsies and what I wanted to make, how I wanted that story of the Shivani to come about. So that story, you know, writing Blood Curse probably took me 5 months, but no, Sacred Legacy was about 2.5 months. Yeah.
Wow. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, that you are the number one selling author of Imagine Publishing. Congratulations on that. How long have you been with them, and how many books do you have out?
I have been, first of all, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that. I have been with Imagine Books since 2011. They published my first book, Chasing Clovers, and they've pretty much accepted every single book I've given them. God bless
Yay.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have 4 full-length novels out, and I have 2 novellas out. One is one that I co-wrote with another one of the authors at Imagine Books. That's Hazardous Unions. And so there's you'll get 2 stories in that book. And then last year, Fern, the Montgomery Sisters, came out, and that's a novella. And that will be a series. There's 3 sisters, Fern, Poppy, and Ivy. And that's what I'm working on right now, is Poppy and Ivy's story. And those are all standalone books as well, but they'll be part of a series.
Well, now, from what I understand with Imagine, the authors have to do a lot of their own book promotion. How do you feel about getting out there and promoting books and social media and the way it is today with trying to publicize your book?
You know, it doesn't bother me. Imagine Books does a lot to help their authors, and I appreciate that. Coming into it in 2011, I had no idea what the heck I was doing. So Cheryl took me under her wing and basically showed me the ropes and showed everybody the ropes. And she treats everybody like family, which is unbelievable. She's just a great person to work
with.
And it is. It's really, really nice. And so, you know, talking with other authors, and, you know, before I decided to publish, I researched, you know, I researched other publishing companies. I researched the Big Six, and I researched, you know, the small ones and the medium ones, and they all require you to market your books, you know, some more
right.
than others. So for me, I look at it as a way of giving back to my readers. They can reach out to me, and I respond every single time. They know who I am. Like, they can, you know, come on Facebook and see me and talk to me and chat with me, and, you know, any email I ever receive, I always reply to. I would like to keep it personal. I like, you know, I would, when I was an aspiring author, I would email authors, and, you know, some would email me back and some wouldn't, you know. And I just think that as an author, and to be privileged enough and honored enough to have somebody sign you for a book deal is amazing. And the least that I could do is always stay humble and always stay
sure.
true to who I am and what I know and how I want to treat people. And I don't ever want to look down on anybody. I am the same as everybody else. And so for me to market my books, I love it. I mean, it comes with a downside, too, when a book comes out. You know, it's a lot of time, and it's a lot of effort being online. And I just did a, like, 60-day book tour for the Branded Trilogy and Sacred Legacy, and that took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And, you know, yep, there are nights that you don't sleep, but that's just part of the business, and that's what every author needs to, you know, aspiring author needs to understand is that it's not just about writing a book. It's also about marketing your book and connecting to your readers and, you know, being available and being flexible and being able to take constructive criticism and being able to understand that not everybody's going to like your book, and that's okay. And, you know, but for the people that I do touch and for the people that, you know, absolutely love the books that I write, that means the world to me. So if it's even, you know, 1 out of 100, it still means the world to me, and that's why I write.
Right. No, and I completely agree, and I think your humble, down-to-earth nature and the fact that you're so willing to give back is probably one of the main reasons that you've been so blessed with such success and continued success. I think what comes around goes around. I'm a full believer in that. Well, you mentioned your social media sites and the fact that your readers can reach out to you. Share with our listeners where your social media sites are and your website and your email and how they can reach you.
Absolutely. So I have a website. It's www.catflannerybooks.com, and you can go on there and you can check out the things that I'm doing. You can definitely send me an email through my website, and I do reply to every single email personally. Even though I have an assistant, I like to keep it personal. So you can reach out to me there, and definitely on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. It's Kat Flannery Author, and you can, you know, like my page and, you know, comment, and I always reply. And, you know, I do Twitter. I'm not on it as often as I would love to be, but I am on Twitter, and that's just Kat Flannery One, you know. And so those are basically my three major ones that I go to, but I'm definitely, you know, on Facebook a lot, and I'm always, you know, with my website, I'm always, you know, replying to the emails there. So I definitely love to hear from my readers or, you know, aspiring authors. I have a lot of advice on my website too, and any questions, you know, I'm always there to help.
Well, mentioning your website, I love your website, and I encourage everyone to go over there and check it out, catflannerybooks.com. And you mentioned earlier that you loved Anne Rice, and I love the article that you posted on September 20th about why Anne Rice is awesome and how she messaged you back when you reached out to her. So here you are talking about that. Kind of, I know we're running short on time, and my gosh, I could talk to you for another 30 minutes, but just give us a little blip of about that reaching out to Anne Rice and her answering you back.
Anne Rice is amazing, absolutely amazing. And, you know, a few years ago I had written an article, and Anne Rice shared it on her Facebook page, and I got like so many hits from it. And, you know, I've had several conversations with her on her Facebook page. She is just an amazing woman, an amazing author. And within my publishing, like Imagine Books, the publishing company I'm signed on to, they require us to get certain review blurbs, you know, for the front of the book or endorsements and things
right.
like that. And, you know, I just thought one day I'm gonna approach Miss Rice. Like, I'm going to ask her. I'm going to do it. And, you know, I had to have a glass of whiskey before I did it, and had to get the nerves up. And, you know, so I wrote her an email, and I sent her the book. And, you know, she replied to me, and I'm not even joking you, within 10 minutes. And I, of course, you know, I thought I would just get a form letter. Like, you know, she is so huge. I just didn't think that I would get anything back. And she personally wrote me back, and she said, "It sounds wonderful. Right now I am sick with Bell's palsy, and I have shingles in my eye, and I cannot read it, but I wish you every success, you know, in everything that you do, you know, love, Anne Rice." And I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away, because she is the author that I want to be. Like, and that blog post is exactly how I feel. I'm a very emotional person, and so when I write personal blog posts, I am basically putting myself out there, and that blog post is very true. I want to be like her. I want to give back. I want to talk to my readers. I want to be there for them. I want to give them advice. And Anne Rice is awesome, and if you haven't read her, you should read her. She's amazing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it has been so incredible to visit with you, and I think that it's so wonderful that there's someone that you aspire to and that you're thrilled when they reach back to you. And I have to tell you that I have no doubt that readers and aspiring authors who write and you answer them back, that means the world to them too. So I wish you the best of luck with the Brand Trilogy and all of your future projects. I encourage all of our listeners to go check out Sacred Legacy and the entire Branded Trilogy. I mentioned to you off air that I've never been a big paranormal reader, but I am going to be reading the Branded Trilogy. So thank you again, Kat Flattery, for being our guest, and I wish you the very best of luck, and I encourage our readers to go check out this number one selling author with Imagine Books. Thanks again, Kat. Bye-bye.
Thank you so very much. Bye-bye.